I thought I'd start the sermon this week with an illustration. It's a brief account of a missionary named Helen Rosevere, as recounted by Roy Zook in his Speakers the Quote book. It says, Helen Rosevere was a British medical missionary in the Congo years ago during an uprising. Her faith was strong and her trust was confident, yet she was raped and assaulted and treated brutally. Later she said, I must ask myself a question as if it came directly from the Lord. Can you, Helen, thank me for trusting you with this experience, even if I never tell you why? So I thought that question was really thought-provoking, that Helen would think, could she trust the Lord in spite of the suffering that she faced in service to the Lord? Here she is out serving the Lord, trying to be a witness to Him, and here she undergoes this suffering and being treated brutally because of her work for the Lord. And can she be thankful to God? Can she continue to trust Him? And many times in life we will suffer, and it will seem meaningless, or it will seem unjust, as we've seen Job face and as Helen faced. And at times like these, we'll be tempted to question God and question, why is this happening to us? This seems unfair. And we grieve, we grow frustrated and we grieve. And maybe like Job, we're tempted to wish that we could pull God down out of heaven and say, God, why am I undergoing this suffering? Why this trial? If only I knew why I was suffering or what good would result from this, perhaps then I could suffer better. Perhaps I could endure this better. Perhaps this situation would be easier for me. And so today what we're going to be talking about is why we should trust God when we're seemingly suffering without reason. Today we're going to finally hear God speak into Job's situation. We're going to be in Job chapter 38. If you have your Bibles, I'd encourage you to turn there. We're going to be reading out of Job 38 and Job 40, but I'm going to be alluding to different things from Job 38 to Job 42, so it'd be good if you could kind of be taking a look at that as I allude to those different passages. And so we're going to finally see God show up and speak for Himself. So I realize if you've been keeping track of what chapters we've been in, we're skipping a lot of material here to go towards the end of Job. And that's because what we've seen so far through the first 13 and 14 chapters of Job continues. So what happens where we left off before is Job's three friends, they start speaking again, and it's largely the same material. Job, you need to repent. You must have sinned. They get a little bit more vehement in their accusations and what they say, and Job responds largely the same. And then they finish that second round. Then they start up a third round and go through that. And then another young man shows up, and he speaks for God. And so it gets kind of repetitive. So we're going to jump to see God finally speaks. There's been a lot of people speaking for God, and Job has been complaining about things that God has done, and so we're going to finally see God speak for Himself. So God's going to show us in this passage today three reasons why we should trust Him in the midst of suffering, especially when it seems like it's unfair or it's unjust or it just doesn't make any sense. And then we'll see an application of what we should do in light of trusting God. So 4 points total you should see on your inserts in your bulletin that we'll see today. So with that, let's see what God has to say. We'll jump right in, and I'll start in chapter 38, verses 1 through 38, and the verses should be on the screens behind me as well. So Job 38, starting in verse 1. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Dress for action like a man, and I will question you, and you make it known to me. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurement? Surely you know. Or stretched the line upon it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and the sons of God shouted for joy? Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst out from the womb? When I made clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band? And prescribed limits for it and set bars and doors and said, thus far shall you come and no farther. And here shall your proud waves be stayed. Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place, that it might take hold of the skirts of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it? It is changed like clay under the sea, under the seal, and its features stand out like a garment. From the wicked their light is withheld, and their uplifted arm is broken. Have you entered into the springs of the sea or walked into the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been revealed to you, or have you seen the gates of deep darkness? Have you comprehended the expanse of the earth? Declare if you know all of this. Where is the way to the dwelling of light? And where is the place of darkness, that you may take it to its territory, and that you may discern the paths to its home? You know, for you were born then, and the number of your days is great. Have you entered the storehouses of the snow? Or have you seen the storehouses of the hail, which I have reserved for the time of trouble, for the day of battle and war? What is the way to the place where the light is distributed, or where the east wind is scattered upon the earth? Who has cleft a channel for the torrents of rain, and a way for the thunderbolt to bring rain on a land where no man is, on the desert in which there is no man, to satisfy the waste and the desolate land, and to make the ground sprout with grass? Has the rain a father, or who has begotten the drops of dew? From whose womb did the ice come forth, and who gave birth to the frost of heaven? The waters become hard like stone, and the face of the deep is frozen. Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion? Can you lead forth the Maseroth in their season? Can you guide the bear with its children? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you establish their rule on earth? Can you lift up your voice to the clouds that a flood of waters may cover you? Can you send forth lightnings that they may go and say to you, "Here we are"? Who has put wisdom in the inward parts or given understanding to the mind? Who can number the clouds by wisdom, or who can tilt the waterskins of the heavens? When the dust runs into a mass and the clods stick fast together. Now that's a lot of material there. God is questioning Job, giving him all kinds of questions, all kinds of statements, some of whom are sarcastic. But with all of this, the point that God's trying to make is that we should trust God all of the time because he created all things and he sustains all things. God is the creator of everything and he sustains all of creation. That's the point that God's making here. There's been 37 long chapters where people have been speaking for God and Job has been questioning God and Job's friends and their wisdom are speaking what God would say, and they're saying, you know, if only God would come down and speak with you, he'd set you right. He'd reveal to you that you're a sinner and that you deserve all the suffering that you've got. And Job is saying, you know, if only God would come down and I could question him. I could say, God, why are you doing this? Why are you doing what is unjust? Why are you allowing what's not fair? Why am I undergoing this suffering? And so God finally shows up in a whirlwind, and I think everybody gets more than they bargained for, right? First of all, what's a whirlwind? Well, there's different possibilities. I think of a tornado. I think that's a real possibility here. So if God shows up in a tornado and starts off by saying, "Who darkens counsel by words without knowledge?" In Hebrew it says, "Gird up your loins like a man." You know God's about to throw down, right? So everybody better put their seatbelt on. It's kind of like when mom or dad shows up at the house and they're ticked off about something that somebody's done, or ticked off about something, you know, everybody's kind of like, "Whoop. Put your seatbelt on, you know, get ready." It's kind of the issue. God shows up and everybody's getting much more than what they bargained for. And so he starts asking Job all these questions. He asks, "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? And who shut in the seas with doors?" And what God is saying with all of this is, who is Job to question how God is running things? Who is Job to say, you know, "God, things don't seem like they're going right. Things aren't fair." And God's saying, "You know what? I created all things. Who are you to question how I do things and how things are going?" So God is the one who created all things, and he created all things good. God is the one who wrote the definition for what is good. And so who is Job to question God and say, "God, you're doing what's not good. God is the one who created all that's good." And so, you know, sometimes I think we forget to revere God for all that he's made. I mean, we kind of think, you know, yeah, if God created all things are good. But when you're God, you know, it's pretty easy to create things. You say, you know, let there be light. Boom, there's light, right? And we kind of take for granted God's majesty and his knowledge at designing each thing that we have in creation. In verse 35, God asked Job if Job can send forth lightnings. And did you know that even today, meteorologists don't know exactly why lightning happens? A lot of details are foggy. We don't know why lightning hits what it hits. There are certain patterns. We don't know what exactly causes lightning. There's still a lot of mystery, even with all our scientific gadgetry that we have now, collective knowledge. There's still some mystery. But God knows. God created it. God understands exactly why things happen and the way in which they work, because he made all things. And there was something interesting that was reported a couple of weeks ago, and there's still reports coming out about it that you may have seen, that there was an Israeli spacecraft that they launched, and it had different relics from humanity, somebody's DNA they put on there, and some files about human culture, and some microorganisms called water bears or tardigrades, and I think I have a picture of it, so if you want to put that. Now, you may see this thing and think, man, this thing belongs in outer space, right? But this is something that's here on Earth. And anyway, it got launched. I don't know if it was supposed to land on the moon or if it was just supposed to go into outer space. The point was they were launching it so that if humanity ever ends, some alien race could find it and rediscover things about Earth. But anyway, it crashed into the moon. It wasn't supposed to do that. I don't know if it was going to the moon, but it crashed on the moon. And so everything's destroyed, but they think that these water bears, these tardigrades, survived because they're very hardy, and which is why they launched them into outer space. So these things, these water bears, can dehydrate themselves and be dehydrated, so they can live without water for a long time. They can survive extreme heat, extreme cold. And so we think for the first time ever there might be living things outside of planet Earth, kind of by accident, and nobody really knew this was going to happen. But I say all of that to mention, when I see these things, you may get weirded out by it and think, you know, I don't like this picture, it disturbs me. But when I see these water bears, I'm biased, but I see God's fingerprint in this. Because most microorganisms, when you look at them through a microscope, they're kind of blobs with maybe cilia or tails or something, and they absorb other blobs, right? But when you see this, it looks like a pig or a bear, and I just marvel at God's creativity, and I see God's fingerprint. And I think a lot of times we forget to worship and marvel at God for what he's created. God is really quite magnificent. We see that through creation, through the largest stars and the largest galaxies to the smallest and creatures that you can't even see with the naked eye. So all that to say, if God created all things, all magnificent things, if God designed everything to be good the way it is, then who are we and who is Job to question God with how he does things? In verse 39 of chapter 38 through the end of chapter 39, God points to seven different animals and how they behave to make the point that Job can't maintain God's creation. God has control over all of the animals and he sustains all things. God makes the point that Job would struggle to capture one wild ox and control it. That'd be quite the battle for Job to go out and grab an ox that has not been born in captivity and try to make it submit to what he wants it to do, to get it back to his house, to get it to work the fields. He would struggle with that. That would be quite the battle for Job, just one ox. And yet God controls, and he lists seven different animals, but God controls all these animals and all animals in creation. He sustains all of creation. The world has order. It works. Animals operate, and they live, and they're healthy because God sustains all things. You know, when growing up, we lived in a wooded area. Now, we had two dogs and a cat and hamster and guinea pig. My brother had different animals and turtles. They all kind of died quickly, the small animals. But the dogs and the cat we kept alive and handled pretty well. And they lived happily, and we controlled when they ate. We kept them from running out into traffic. We had control over those animals. But living in a wooded area, there was a lot of animals around our house that went and did their own things. We had a family of foxes that lived kind of behind the house, and I would kind of keep track of them, and I'd see them, and they had healthy coats, and we'd see the new pups running around every year. And then we had deer that were happy and hopping around and would tick the dogs off, and they'd hop through our yard. And then we had squirrels that were bigger than our Yorkie, and they were fat and sassy and running around all the time, and raccoons. And so we had all these animals, and I couldn't keep track of them. I didn't know if I was looking at a squirrel outside, if that was one that had been around for multiple years, or if that was a new squirrel. I couldn't name all the squirrels. We didn't feed the animals, at least not on purpose. We fed our dogs, but that was about it. But these animals were alive. They were happy. They were thriving. The squirrels were fat. I'd see them every spring and dig up nuts that they had buried. And I'd wonder, how in the world are they finding those things? Because they just kind of bury them and dig around. But they were doing well. And it's because God sustains His creation. There is no way, if God tasked us with just taking care of the animals within our property that we owned, there's no way. We wouldn't know how many we had. It'd be a lot to feed them. We'd have to get all kinds of nuts for the squirrels, and yet they lived happily without us because God sustains them. Without God, this world falls apart, and I think we forget that. And if that's the case, who is Job, and again, who are we to think that we know better than God when we're suffering? So turning the page a little bit to chapter 40, verses 3 through 5, Job then responds to God. He expresses his regret at challenging God, but God isn't finished with him. In chapter 40, verse 6, God continues to Job, and he starts round 2 of God's lecture to Job. So everybody better put their seatbelts on again, and he starts talking. And the point that he makes in this section is that we need to trust God at all times, because God is all just and He's all powerful. God is completely just, and He's completely powerful. Let's look at chapter 40, verse 6 through verse 14. God says this: "Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, 'Dress for action like a man, and I will question you, and you make it known to me. Will you even put me in the wrong? Will you condemn me that you may be in the right? Have you an arm like God, and can you thunder with a voice like His? Adorn yourself with majesty and dignity. Clothe yourself with glory and splendor. Pour out the overflowings of your anger, and look on everyone who is proud and abase him. Look on everyone who is proud and bring him low, and tread down the wicked where they stand. Hide them all in the dust together. Bind their faces in the world below. Then will I also acknowledge to you that your own right hand can save you.'" So in verse 8, we see God addressing Job's accusation of God's injustice. If you recall back several weeks, Job was challenging God, saying, "Look, God, you blind the eyes of the judges. You let the wicked prosper. You're doing what's not right." And so God now is coming back to that and saying, "Okay, Job, who are you to condemn me?" And verse 10 through 11, he challenges Job to put on majesty, dignity, and glory, and splendor, basically all the attributes that God has. And of course, Job can't do that. And Job had accused God of doing wrong, and so God challenges Job to do something about it in verses 11 through 14. He's saying, "Okay, Job, if you are upset by the wickedness in the world and you think you could do a better job than me," he said, "fine, go out, go humble the proud, end wickedness in the world, make evil stop." And he said, "Then if you do that, if you annihilate all the evil in the world, then I'll recognize that you've got some power." But of course, Job can't do that. Job can't even deliver himself out of the suffering that he's got. He's powerless to do anything over the evil and the wickedness of the world. And so then God refers to two creatures after what I just read, starting in verse 15. He refers to two creatures to demonstrate that Job has no right to judge the proud person. He has no power. He's unable to handle the wickedness in this world. He refers to the behemoth and the leviathan. Now, it's debated largely what these two creatures were, if they are literal animals, if they're figurative, if they're literal animals, what animals were these. And so I'm not going to get into all of that because it's not essential to the passage and the point that God's trying to communicate. But the behemoth and the leviathan, God is singling out as the most mighty of God's creatures. And he's saying, okay, Job, if you think you're so tough, if you think you can handle the wickedness and the evil of this world, why don't you go handle the behemoth and the leviathan? And he said, saying, Job, you can't even, if you were to go to the leviathan, you can't pull him out of the ocean with a hook. It'd be a battle you'd never forget. You would lose. If you went to the behemoth and you tried to spear it or you tried to take it by the eyes, it would go badly for you. You're powerless. There's nothing you can do about that. And so if Job had to go before these mighty beasts, the mightiest beasts that God has created, he would lose. He'd be powerless before them. And so if Job is powerless before two mighty beasts, then how could he control all of the wickedness, all of the evil of the world? He's powerless. And yet God, he can control the Leviathan and the behemoth because he created them, the mightiest of his creatures. God could control, but with but a word. And so all of this is to point out, okay, Job, you're complaining about how I'm handling the wickedness in this world, how I'm controlling everything, and yet you're powerless to do anything about the evil in the world. You're powerless to do anything even to the most powerful creatures that I've created. You can do nothing. So who are you to challenge how I handle things? Who are you to challenge how I handle the wickedness of the world? And even Satan, who Job has no idea is even the one who's been afflicting him, even Satan has to work within the parameters that God gives to him. Satan has to submit to God. And yet, Job is so powerless, he doesn't even know that Satan's there. Satan's been afflicting him. He can't save himself, and he doesn't even know why he's suffering. So who is Job to challenge God in his circumstances? And, you know, sometimes we also challenge how God handles evil in the world. When someone who's serving the Lord faithfully gets sick, or someone suffers an accident, or we see shootings like we saw in Texas and in Ohio these past couple weeks, sometimes we're tempted to think, you know, why is this wickedness happening? You know, if I were God, I'd knock out all the wickedness in this world. I'd make it so these shootings don't happen. I'd make it so that this evil in the world doesn't happen. I'd make it so that there's no cancer in the world, that there's no accidents, that there's no heart disease. I'd make it so all this ends. But who are we to challenge God in our limited perspective and our limited experience? Perhaps God allows that evil in a certain case to reveal weaknesses in a culture or in a society, or perhaps God is allowing some good that to happen that wouldn't happen otherwise if there was that evil. And who are we to challenge God? Running the world is complex business. Being a pastor of the church can be kind of complex for me, but just imagine being the head of the entire world, running everything from nature's smallest beings to the universe at large and the realm of astronomy, or dealing with people and judging right from wrong and people's intentions. It would be enormously complex. And so God alone has the ability and the justice and the wisdom to handle all of that. We don't, even though sometimes to us things seem pretty simple, pretty black and white. But we shouldn't challenge God. We should trust him because he's able, he's just, and he's powerful to handle all of that. Now, the final reason we see today for why we should trust God in the midst of evil is that we know that God will bless us with more than we've ever had on this earth. We know that God will bless us with more than we've ever had on this earth. We know that God will bless us on the new earth more than we could ever have or we could ever imagine being blessed with here on this earth. If you look at Job 42, 10 through 17, I'm not going to read it, but if you look towards the end of the story, you see how this story ends. You see how the story of Job ends. God restores all the fortunes of Job after he vindicates Job in front of his friends, and Job's brothers and sisters come and they comfort him. He blesses Job with an abundance of wealth, an abundance of crops, an abundance of livestock. He blessed Job with more children. That doesn't undo the suffering that he's endured, but he does have great blessing. He does have more than what he had before. And he blesses him because of his faithfulness in the midst of his suffering. Now, don't get from this that whenever we're suffering, or if you're suffering in the future, or if you're suffering now, that God will necessarily make everything all right and will give you double what you had before and will restore everything. It's not necessarily the case that he does that in this world. He might, but he might not as well. But as Christians, we do have the new earth, what goes beyond this life to look forward to. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 9, it says, "What no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the heart imagined, what God has prepared for those who love him." That's talking about the next life. That's talking about heaven and then the new earth as well. God is preparing for his saints a blessing that we cannot even imagine in the next life. In the next life, our family will grow, it will be multiplied, not with biological children, but with brothers and sisters in Christ, a part of the family of God, of which we are already a part, but it will be fully realized and we'll fully comprehend our family and maybe enjoy them more, I don't know, and the new earth and the new heaven, and it will be a time of blessing that we can't even imagine. And that's something that we can look forward to. That's promised in Scripture, so we can take that to the bank. We know that no matter what suffering we endure in this life, we know that in the end, God will make everything all right on the new earth, that all things will be restored, and not only restored, but we'll be blessed with such a blessing that the trials of this life seem like nothing. It's something that we can't even comprehend. And so that's our great hope as Christians in the midst of suffering. We can trust God because we know that in the end, we know how the story ends, that everything will be made right, that death, that suffering, that evil, that wickedness, that Satan, everything will be cast into hell and will be no more. It will no longer afflict us. We'll live a life of complete blessing with God forever. Now that brings us to our final point in our application for today, that we need to take hope and encouragement in God when suffering unjustly because God is in control. We can take hope and encouragement because we know that God is in control. When life goes horribly wrong, we need to take hope in God because we know that everything lies in the palm of his hand. He's got complete control. Even if it seems like life is out of control, that life is spiraling out of control, that everything has gone to chaos, God is still completely in control. Nothing has surprised him. So we don't despair. In the story of Job, God is in control from the first chapters, where Satan is questioning and challenging God and Job in heaven, to all the way at the end, chapter 42, where he's rebuking Job and rebuking Job's friends, and he's restoring all things. God has been in control. Even though Job didn't realize it, God's eyes were never off of him. God's eyes were on Job. God was with him. God was hearing everything that Job's friends were saying. God was hearing everything that Job was saying, and he was right there. And he was right there when Satan was attacking him, and Satan had to work within his parameters. Everything was in control. And it's the same for us. When we're suffering, everything is in the palm of God's hands. It's not like something kind of slips or God kind of fumbles the ball and says, you know, whoops, that was a close one. No, everything is in God's hand. He's in complete control. He knows what's happening. He's in control of all that's happening. And because of that, we can trust him. Because even if we don't understand what's happening, even if it's bigger than what we can imagine, we know that God understands and God is completely in control. So when we suffer tragedy, when we suffer illness, when we face the hardships in life, remember that God is there with us. He's there with us through all of it. He knows what's going on and he is in complete control. God is able to handle our suffering and our sorrow. And we should trust God all the time because he created all things and he sustains all that we see. He's just and he's powerful enough to handle all the wickedness of the world. And we know that in the end he'll bless us with more than we've ever had on this earth. So take hope and encouragement in God when we're suffering because we know that he's in complete control of our lives. And you know, I think a lot of times when I've read Job, the end seems kind of dissatisfying, God's response, because, you know, after all of this talk and everything, we expect that God will answer Job and say, okay, Job, let me tell you the story. Okay, Satan came in to the throne room. He said, you know, Job's not going to follow you if you afflict him. And I said, okay, Satan, let's try this theory out. And God showed Satan and possibly other angels that his theory about how God and God's followers interact was all wrong. And he says, okay, Job, you did well. Job's friends, you guys are all wrong. You have no idea what you're talking about. And he addresses all of the questions that have been dealt with in Job. But God doesn't do that. He shows up and he basically says, okay, look, everybody, I'm God. I do things you can't even imagine. I created everything. I'm more powerful than all of you. I'm more wise than all of you. You can't even handle some creatures that I've created. So who are you to question me? He doesn't address the questions. And for all we know, Job never had any idea why he suffered what he suffered. But in the end, Job trusts God because he realizes, I was talking about what I didn't understand, that God is all powerful, that God had everything in control, that God can handle all of the evil in the world. And God is still good, and God is still trustworthy. So when we suffer, we know that we can trust God. Even if it doesn't make sense, even if in the smartest thinking person in the world says, this doesn't make sense, it seems unjust, we know that it's okay, that God has it in control, that it is just, that God is still good. And I want to close with a poem by James Smith. Now, I tried to figure out who this James Smith was, because that's a pretty common name, and there's a lot of famous James Smith, it turns out, and so I have no idea who this was. I don't know if this was the James Smith that was involved in early American history, or if this was some other James Smith, or just some average guy, you know, 20 years ago named James Smith that writes poems. I don't know, but some guy named James Smith wrote this, and I want to close with this poem. It says, I know not what may soon betide, but Jesus knows, and he'll provide. My life is by his counsel planned, and all my times are in his hand. I'll therefore trust, nor yield to fear, but cast on Jesus all my care. And so as we close our series in Job, just remember to trust in God, even when we're suffering, and even when it seems like it doesn't make sense and we cry out and we say, you know, God, why is this happening? Know that we can always trust God. Know that God has everything in control and that he knows what's going on. He knew what was going to happen before it happened and he knows how it's going to end. And we know that in the end, we'll be blessed and we'll be restored. If not in this life, we know in the next life. And it'll all be okay. Let's close in prayer.